Otter recreation season has started here in the Arrowhead, and sometimes things go wrong. But you can make a big difference when you know what to do if faced with a drowning victim. Start CPR. Here to tell us more is Dr. Joshua Tobin, a medical school professor at the University of Southern California. He recently led and published a study about CPR and drowning. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, sir, I had to do a little bio looking up, and you are quite an accomplished man. In addition to your role in the medical field, you're a flight surgeon and a decorated Navy veteran. You certainly have experience in the field of resuscitation and CPR. Tell us about your study that you've just put together.
Right. Well, thanks for the opportunity to chat about it. My colleagues at the Scientific Advisory Council for the American Red Cross and I queried data from the Cardiac Arrest Registry for Enhanced Survival. So this is a big database that looks at patients who have suffered cardiac arrest around the United States and was originally developed in 2004 as a collaboration between EMRI and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Now, cardiac arrest is, you know, people commonly think of it as someone collapses on the street and their heart stops and breathing stops. And of course, that is one manifestation of cardiac arrest. But there are many, many different types of cardiac arrest. And one of the ones that we looked at was cardiac arrest following drowning. For example, is there something different about what happens to the body during a drowning that favors certain therapies over other therapies, or perhaps is there no difference at all? So we were able to look at that, and this CARES database is wonderful. It includes 62 communities in 23 of the 50 United States and includes almost 100 million people. So it's really an extensive data set, and we were very lucky to have the support of the people at CARES to help us with that. But one of the things that we found is if someone does suffer cardiac arrest following drowning, bystander CPR will help them have a more neurologically favorable outcome. Now, what does that mean? Well, we want to look at survival following cardiac arrest. Of course, we want everyone to survive, but a lot of times if you survive and are in a persistent vegetative state or something like that, many people would not consider that to be a good thing. So we wanted to stratify that for neurologically favorable survival and looked at something called cerebral performance category. And we found that patients who had bystander CPR following cardiac arrest after drowning had improved cerebral performance category scores. Also, if you had a witness drowning or if you were younger, you also had a more likely chance of a neurologically favorable survival.
I see. Now, so you had big data sort of coming to your aid in terms of what did you go off of? Police reports, medical records? How did you determine your drowning victims and whether or not CPR was performed on them?
Well, they were primarily drawn from the reports of EMS agencies. There's about 1,100 EMS agencies that are in the CARES database, as well as 1,500 hospitals. So we looked at electronic medical and paper medical records from the hospitals in addition to these EMS-run reports. That's where we got our initial data set. And then we took it and analyzed it with the help of some of our biostatisticians from Indiana University. And let me tell you, we had a great team on this study. We had people from all over the place. We had the University of Pennsylvania with some of our cardiology experts, University of Washington with emergency medicine. We even had a orthopedic surgeon who is a lifelong lifeguard and expert in drowning, in addition to some of our statistics help at Indiana University. So we ran it through our statistical analysis to say, listen, is it just a fluke? Is it just by chance alone that we found some of these associations, or are they statistically significant? And in fact, we found the statistically significant results that I referenced. Most importantly, good bystander CPR is going to help the victims of drowning. So if you see someone who's drowned, or even if you've seen anyone really who's collapsed, initiating good bystander CPR and calling 911 is probably the most important thing you can do to help that person.
Well, now let's talk about CPR, Josh, as far as, sure, you know, training and the need to be trained. And a lot of folks I know have had this either through work or through their career. Is there some numbers out there as far as the public and how many people are proficient and trained in CPR versus how many aren't?
I don't know the exact numbers. So I'm sure that number is out there, but I'm sorry, I don't have that number at the tip of my tongue. What I can tell you is that in communities where community CPR efforts have been pushed, for example, in King County up in Seattle, that was a community back in the 1990s that really pushed bystander CPR, they found that their cardiac arrest survival rates were improved from the simple fact of having patients suffer cardiac arrest and then someone would immediately start CPR on them. So that is absolutely a vital part of the public health and contribution to community health projects, is having people there who can do good, hard, fast CPR the moment someone drops. Now, people often say, well, how do you do CPR? What if you never took a course? How am I going to do this? Well, you can put your hands in the middle of the person's chest, overlying the breastbone, and push hard and fast. Basically, there's a number of different measurements of how deep you want to compress the chest, but realistically speaking, just push hard and fast. And how fast? Well, they say 100 beats a minute is how fast you want to go, but sadly, not many of us walk around with a metronome, so it's tough to count that in our heads. But what you can do is think of the beat from that song, Staying Alive, no kidding, and it goes, staying alive, staying alive. And if you just hear that in your head as you're doing CPR, that's 100 beats a minute.
That's the same song the trainer told us to use, Josh.
Okay.
And it's a fitting song, Staying Alive. Now, there's no question about it. You're not going to do much more harm in terms of this. Obviously, you got a drowning victim. They're unconscious. They're near death. CPR is going to create some additional trauma to the chest. But like you say, it's worth doing, and you just jump into it and start doing, and your chances of favorable results increase.
I would agree with that. Certainly anything you do in medicine can have a not favorable or a bad side to it. Even taking an aspirin, that can cause you to bleed too much, right? But I think if someone collapses in front of me, a family member collapses in front of me, I would start CPR immediately. Yes, you can break people's ribs doing CPR. Typically, that's not much of a problem, and I'd rather have someone give me CPR and break my ribs than not start prompt CPR and then sadly, you might die. And there are other case reports in the literature of some internal organ injury. So, I have to be honest with you and say, yeah, there is a possibility of injury, but it's very, very slight in comparison to the risk of not doing good, hard, fast CPR the moment someone collapses, and also calling 911.
I'm Dave Terstig. We're talking with Dr. Joshua Tobin. He's out west in L.A. He's a medical school professor at the University of Southern California. He's got a new study out in resuscitation, pointing out the highlights and the advantages to immediate CPR when drowning is involved. And Josh and I were just sort of going through the rudimentary, what it takes to perform CPR. It's hard, steady chest compressions, 100 beats a minute. Any other tips, Josh? Is it true that, we've had some changes in the procedure? Used to be the 15-2 and rescue breathing. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, there have been some changes. It's somewhat controversial, actually. With the European Resuscitation Council tends to go more with airway breathing circulation, ABC, the more traditional presentation of CPR. But nowadays here in the United States, we found with some research that's been done here that we want to go more with CAB, which is circulation, airway, and then breathing. Now, what does that mean? Well, sadly, a lot of people had some hesitancy about doing mouth-to-mouth, maybe on a stranger or someone they didn't know on the street. And so we said, hey, listen, at least do chest compressions because it's better than nothing. And so we found better outcomes with bystander CPR when people were willing to at least do the chest compressions. Now, there's some more data that are beginning to come out there or refining some of our findings there. So more to follow on that. But I think that for now, good, hard, fast chest compressions is the way to go. If you do respirations, well, that's fine as well. I wouldn't focus too much on what the ratio is. I first learned CPR when I was a lifeguard, when I was a kid in high school, and I know that got drilled into our head, the 15-2 and the 30-1, and then with the two-person, you have the 5-1, and all these different things that kind of get swirled around in your mind. And I think maybe intimidate learners a little bit because they're focusing on learning a ratio of compressions to ventilations when what they want to remember is call 911, hard, fast chest compressions.
And how long do you do the compressions, Josh?
Yeah, I would do them until EMS showed up. Keep going, 911. Usually, most areas, they're going to be there pretty darn quick, and then they can take over for you. And really, the therapy that you enact in those first moments following the cardiac arrest is going to have long-term outcome for that patient. Not only might they're definitely more likely to survive, but they might be more likely to survive with a neurologically favorable outcome. Now, there's also the issue, though, of CPR writ large. The survival rates overall are generally not great. We found our survival rate in our study was somewhere in the order of 12 to 14%, which is about what you'd see in other studies. So just because someone maybe doesn't have a great outcome doesn't mean you didn't do the right thing, and it shouldn't discourage you from making every effort to do those good, hard, fast chest compressions from the get-go.
Well, that's certainly the truth. Any risk as far as litigation? You know, sometimes folks point out they don't want to get sued. What's the Good Samaritan law say about that?
You know, you're right. That is an issue people often worry about. I don't know of anyone getting sued for doing bystander CPR. I'd have to defer to a legal expert. I just don't know. The specifics of the Good Samaritan law, I think if you're acting in the best interest of the patient or the person there, no one's going to sue you, I would imagine. But again, I'd defer to a lawyer on that one. And I certainly wouldn't hesitate for a second to do CPR on a complete stranger if I saw them drop in front of me on the street. As a physician, I tell residents that I teach all the time, obviously you need to be doing the best you can for your patients and informing them of all your decisions and involving them in the healthcare process. But if you hold the best interest of the patients at heart, generally you're going to be okay.
All right, Josh, now here's a question. You probably don't have the issue of cold water down in Southern California, but a lot of cold lakes up here in Minnesota, Northern Minnesota, Lake Superior, cold water reflex. Talk a little bit about that.
Yep. Yeah, we don't have a whole lot of cold water here in Southern California. But, yeah, that's when you hop into the water and you kind of get that laryngospasm. That's where your throat kind of closes off and you kind of catch your breath as you're jumping into the water. And that can really be alarming to people. As far as does that increase your risk of cardiac arrest or not, I just don't know. I would imagine not probably, but, you know, I haven't looked at that individual data. But that alarming kind of laryngospasm where it takes your breath away certainly is a problem. Normally, you know, as a lifelong swimmer, you know, I just kind of swim through it for a minute or two, and it usually sorts itself out. But obviously, if you can't breathe, you'd be wanting to get out of the water.
Well, it's an involuntary response, I understand. Is there any way to, like, sort of get ready and hold your breath? I guess that's the only tip I can say, too, is, like, expect that shock.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I still enjoy open water swimming, and I've done some swimming up in the San Francisco Bay, the Alcatraz swim, and that water was really cold. And I did just what you said. I just kind of, you know, prepare yourself. It's going to be cold, and then you hop in, and you go, oh, my gosh. You know? But there's no training preparation that you can do that I'm aware of, and certainly from a physiologic standpoint, you know, there's nothing you can do to sort of desensitize yourself to that effect.
All right, Josh. So you and your team have certainly proved the message of immediate CPR is best in the case of drowning recovery. How about a little bit about prevention? How can we not drown?
Well, I think learning how to swim is probably your number one thing. Drowning is a huge worldwide problem, accounting for something like 300,000-400,000 deaths per year around the world. And I think swimming education is a major part of helping people prevent drowning. The American Red Cross is a big part of that as well, not only with learning to swim for the little shavers and getting them on swim teams, but also adult swimming, which, let's admit it, it can be kind of hard as an adult to say, I'm not that good a swimmer, and then, you know, you go to the local pool to try to take lessons. Maybe people feel a little self-conscious, but, you know, you shouldn't, because I've been swimming my whole life. I love it. It's great exercise, and there's nothing wrong with learning how to swim later in life. So swim lessons, I would say, would be a number one thing. Now, if you're just not a good swimmer, or if you're not a swimmer and your kids aren't very good swimmers, but you're still going to the pool party and you don't want to, you know, the kids are a little embarrassed and maybe they don't want to tell people that they're not good swimmers, well, just make sure they have a life jacket on. Nothing wrong with being in the pool with a life jacket. If you got a kid around the pool that can't swim and perhaps mom and dad can't swim at all, you know, don't be afraid to have a life jacket on those kids. And then as we come into the summer months, you know, particularly for the young adults that may be in the audience, alcohol and the water just don't mix, plain and simple. And I know as kind of an old man and a doctor, people kind of roll their eyes when you say that. But honestly, you know, you cannot take the water too seriously. And if you have a couple of drinks and you get in the water, you're really taking your life in your hands. So just don't do it.
Well, that is excellent advice, Josh. And you're more than just an old man and a medical doctor. You're a diving medical officer and a flight surgeon and a numerous awards, Air Medal, Navy, Marine Corps Commendation Medal. I just got to give you all those credit where credit's due.
You're very kind.
And I appreciate all your time here on the Roadhouse. Let's see. I think we covered most of the basics. Do you have any further advice, any resources online? I'm going to let our listeners know that here in Cook County, CPR training is available at the YMCA, as well as swim lessons. Stone Harbor Wilderness Supply offers CPR training, and then the local fire departments will also be able to get you in touch with some training there for the for CPR. And then swim lessons at the Y, always good advice. Anything on the outs, Dr. Tobin?
Absolutely. I agree with everything you said. Hey, learn CPR this summer. Just if a few people in the audience could do me that favor, that I'd be a happy man. So if a few people go learn CPR because they heard this broadcast, that would be wonderful. So I hope a few folks do that. And have a fun summer and enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you, Josh. You as well.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Dr. Joshua Tobin on CPR and the importance to start it immediately after drowning, as well as the importance of learning to swim.